For 10 years, SOS News has been writing stories. Many of those stories we have mentioned the people with the snout in the trough, the real problem to society's woes, the people who just turn a blind eye. It's their career. It's their salary. It's their wage packet. It's everything about their own personal lives they will never risk when perhaps they should. In the Northern Hemisphere in America, www.truthdig.com, Chris Hedges writes a column, and his latest column on the 23rd of July was called The Careerists, and it epitomised everything SOS in many ways has tried to put to the public this side of the equator, below the equator. And it goes like this for those that have the time to listen, carry on working, perhaps. The greatest crimes of human history are made possible by the most colourless human beings. They are the careerists, the bureaucrats, the cynics. They do the little chores that make vast, complicated systems of exploitation and death a reality. They collect and read the personal data gathered on tens of millions of us by the security and surveillance state. They keep the accounts of ExxonMobil, BP, and Goldman Sachs. They build or pilot aerial drones. They work in corporate advertising and public relations. They issue the forms. They process the papers. They denied food stamps to some and unemployment benefits or medical coverage to others. They enforce the laws and the regulations, and they do not ask questions. Good, evil, these words do not mean anything to them. They are beyond morality. They are there to make corporate systems function. If insurance companies abandon tens of millions of sick to suffer and die, so be it. If banks and sheriff's departments toss families out of their homes, so be it. If financial firms rob citizens of their savings, so be it. If the government shuts down schools and libraries, so be it. If the military murders children in Pakistan or Afghanistan, so be it. If commodity speculators drive up the cost of rice and corn and wheat so that they are unaffordable for hundreds of millions of poor across the planet, so be it. If Congress and the courts strip citizens of basic civil liberties, so be it. If the fossil fuel industries turns the earth into a broiler of greenhouse gases that doom us, so be it. They serve the system. The god of profit and exploitation. The most dangerous force in the industrialized world does not come from those who wield radical creeds, whether Islamic radicalism or Christian fundamentalism, but from legions of faceless bureaucrats who claw their way up layered corporate and governmental machines. They serve any system that meets their pathetic quota of needs. These system managers believe nothing. They have no loyalty. They are rootless. They do not think beyond their tiny, insignificant roles. They are blind and deaf. They are, at least regarding the great ideas and patterns of human civilization and history, utterly illiterate. And we churn them out of universities. Lawyers, technocrats, business majors, financial managers, IT specialists, consultants, petroleum engineers, positive psychologists, communication majors, cadets, sales representatives, computer programmers. Men and women who know no history, know no ideas, they live and think in an intellectual vacuum, a world of stultifying minutiae. They are T.S. Eliot's the hollow men, the stuffed men, shape without form, shade without contour, the poet wrote. Paralyzed force, gesture without motion. It was the careerists who made possible the genocides, from the extermination of Native Americans to the Turkish slaughter of the Armenians to the Nazi Holocaust to Stalin's liquidations. They were the ones who kept the trains running. They filled out the forms and presided over the property confiscations. They rationed the food while children starved. They manufactured the guns. They ran the prisons. They enforced travel bans, confiscated passports, seized bank accounts, and carried out segregation. They enforced the law. They did their jobs. Political and military careerists, backed by war profiteers, have led us into useless wars, including World War I, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. And millions follow them, duty, honour, country, carnivals of death. They sacrifice us all. In the futile battles of Verdun and the Somme in World War I, 1.8 million on both sides were killed, wounded, or never found. In July of 1917, British Field Marshal Douglas Haig, despite the seas of dead, doomed even more in the mud of Passchendaele. By November, when it was clear his promised breakthrough at Passchendaele had failed, he jettisoned the initial goal, as we did in Iraq when it turned out there were no weapons of mass destruction, and in Afghanistan when Al-Qaeda left the country, and opted for a simple war of attrition. Haig won if more Germans and Allied troops died. Death is a scorecard. Passchendaele took 600,000 more lives on both sides of the line before it ended. It is not a news story. Generals are almost always buffoons. Soldiers follow John the Blind, who had lost his eyesight a decade earlier, to resounding defeat at the Battle of Crecy in 1337 during the Hundred Years' War. We discover that leaders are mediocrities only when it is too late. David Lloyd George, who was the British Prime Minister during the Passchendaele campaign, wrote in his memoirs, before the Battle of Passchendaele, "The tank's corps staff prepared maps to show how a bombardment which obliterated the drainage would inevitably lead to a series of pools, and they located the exact spots where those waters would gather. The only reply was a peremptory order that they were to send no more of these ridiculous maps. Maps must conform to plans and not plans to maps. Facts that interfered with plans were impertinencies." Here you have the explanation why our ruling elites do nothing about climate change, refuse to respond rationally to economic meltdown, and are incapable of coping with the collapse of globalization and an empire. There are circumstances that interfere with the very viability and sustainability of the system, and bureaucrats know only how to serve the system. They know only the managerial skills they ingested at West Point or Harvard Business School. They cannot think on their own. They cannot challenge assumptions or structures. They cannot intellectually or emotionally recognize that the system might implode. And so they do what Napoleon warned was the worst mistake a general could make. Paint an imaginary picture of a situation and accept it as real. But we blithely ignore reality along with them. The mania for a happy ending blinds us. We do not want to believe what we see. It is too depressing. So we all retreat into collective self-delusion. In Claude Lanzmann's monumental documentary film Shoah on the Holocaust, he interviews Philip Müller, a Czech Jew who survived the liquidations in Auschwitz as a member of the Special Detail. Müller relates his story. "One day in 1943, when I was already in Crematorium 5, a train from Bialystok arrived. A prisoner on the Special Detail saw a woman in the undressing room, who was the wife of a friend of his. He came right out and told her, 'You're going to be exterminated. In 3 hours, you'll be ashes.' The woman believed him because she knew him. She ran all over and warned to the other woman, 'We're going to be killed. We're going to be gassed.' Mothers carrying their children on their shoulders didn't want to hear that. They decided the woman was crazy. They chased her away. So she went to the men, to no avail. Not that they didn't believe her. They heard rumors in the Bialystok ghetto or in Grodno and elsewhere. But who wanted to hear that? When she saw that no one would listen, she scratched her whole face out of despair, in shock, and she started to scream." Blaise Pascal wrote in Pensées, "We run heedlessly into the abyss after putting something in front of us to stop us from seeing it." Hannah Arendt, in writing Eichmann in Jerusalem, noted that Adolf Eichmann was primarily motivated by an extraordinary diligence in looking out for his personal advancement. He joined the Nazi Party because it was a good career move. The trouble with Eichmann, she wrote, was precisely that so many were like him, and that the many were neither perverted nor sadistic, that they were, and still are, terribly and terrifyingly normal. The longer one listened to him, the more obvious it became that his inability to speak was closely connected with an inability to think, namely, to think from the standpoint of somebody else. Arendt wrote, "No communication was possible with him. Not because he lied, but because he was surrounded by the most reliable of all safeguards against words in the presence of others, and hence against reality as such." Gita Sereni makes the same point in her book, Into That Darkness, about Franz Stangi, the commandant of Treblinka. The assignment to the SS was a promotion for the Austrian policeman. Stangi was not a sadist. He was soft-spoken and polite. He loved his wife and children very much. Unlike most Nazi camp officers, he did not take Jewish women as concubines. He was efficient and highly organized. He took pride in having received an official commendation as the best camp commander in Poland. Prisoners were simply objects, goods. "That was my profession," he said. "I enjoyed it. It fulfilled me. And yes, I was ambitious about that. I won't deny it." When Sereny asked Anji how, as a father, he could kill children, he answered that he really saw them as individuals. It was always a huge mess. They were naked, packed together, running, being driven with whips. He later told Sereny that when he read about lemmings, it reminded him of Treblinka. Christopher Browning's collection of essays, The Path to Genocide, notes that it was the moderate, normal bureaucrats, not the zealots, who made the Holocaust possible. Germaine Tillion pointed out the tragic easiness during the Holocaust with which decent people could become the most callous executioners without seeming to notice what was happening to them. The Russian novelist Vasily Grossman, in his book Forever Flowing, observed that the new state did not require holy apostles, fanatic, inspired builders, faithful, devout principles. The new state did not even require servants, just clerks. The most nauseating type of SS were to me personally the cynics who no longer genuinely believed in their cause, but went on collecting blood guilt for its own sake, wrote Dr. Ella Lingsenreiner in Prisoners of Fear. Her searing memoir of Auschwitz, though cynics were not always brutal to the prisoners, their behaviour changed with their mood. They took nothing seriously, neither themselves nor their cause, neither us nor our situation. One of the worst among them was Dr. Mengele, the camp doctor I've mentioned before. When a batch of newly arrived Jews was being classified into those fit for work and those fit for death, he would whistle a melody and rhythmically jerk his thumb over his right or his left shoulder, which meant gas or work. He thought conditions in the camp rotten, and even did a few things to improve them, but at the same time, he committed murder callously, without any qualms. These army of bureaucrats serve a corporate system that will quite literally kill us. They are as cold and disconnected as Mengele. They carry out minute tasks. They are docile, compliant. They obey. They find their self-worth in the prestige and power of the corporation, in the status of their positions, and in their career promotions. They assure themselves of their own goodness through their private acts as husbands, wives, mothers and fathers. They sit on school boards, they go to Rotary, they attend church. It is moral schizophrenia. They erect walls to create an isolated consciousness. They make the lethal goals of ExxonMobil, Goldman Sachs, or Raytheon, or insurance companies possible. They destroy the ecosystem, the economy, and the body politic, and they turn working men and women into impoverished serfs. They feel nothing. Metaphysical naivety always ends in murder. It fragments the world. Little acts of kindness and charity mask the monstrous evil they abet. And the system rolls forward. The polar ice caps melt. The droughts rage over cropland. The drones deliver death from the sky. The state moves inexorably forward to place us in chains. The sick die, the poor starve, the prisons fill, and the careerist, plodding forward, does his or her job. Those words say it all. They may be harsh and they may be confronting. The reality is, it's sufficient for evil to survive as long as good men do nothing. Brumby with two Y's.